headlines, Iran's president says his country will hold talks with the U.S. within the framework of the 2050 nuclear deal once Washington ends its economic terrorism on Tehran. Ghana becomes the first country in the world to receive the coronavirus vaccine shots under the World Health Organization's COVAX scheme. And also, authorities in the U.S. state of Texas say around 3.4 million people still face disrupted water supplies following a deadly winter storm last week. Our top story for this half hour, Iran's president says that Tehran will sit down for talks within the framework of the 2050 nuclear deal only if the new U.S. administration lifts the economic sanctions imposed by its predecessor.
The new U.S. administration should immediately stop economic terrorism operations against Iran. Such a move will open the way. That's the key to opening the door and holding talks together. We have no problems with that.
Rouhani added President Joe Biden's administration has acknowledged that the anti-Iran maximum pressure campaign by Donald Trump has failed. So Rouhani added, the new U.S. government should abandon that policy. He then underlined it was Iran that preserved the nuclear deal despite scaling down its commitments in response to Washington's 2018 illegal withdrawal from the accord. The Iranian president said his country has been the only signatory to the deal to fully deliver on all of its commitments. He called on the Europeans and the U.S. to make good on their commitments, too. The three European signatories to the 2015 Iran nuclear deal have called on Tehran to cooperate with the International Atomic Energy Agency. In a joint statement, foreign ministers of Britain, France, and Germany expressed regret about Iran's decision to suspend the additional protocol to the Non-Proliferation Treaty. In the meantime, the U.S. State Department spokesman called on Iran to work with the U.N. nuclear body. The comments come despite a deal reached between Tehran and the IAEA, which temporarily extends inspections of Iran's nuclear sites for 3 months. Iran's parliament passed a law last December which required the government to take further steps to scale back Iran's commitments under the JCPOA, including halting the voluntary implementation of the additional protocol. The parliament's decision was in response to the remaining signatories' failure to keep their end of the bargain. Political commentator Mostafa Khoshchesham says Iran's decision to suspend the implementation of the additional protocol has its roots in the failure of the new U.S. administration to lift sanctions.
So, for quite a long time, they've been misusing Iran's loyalty and optimism with regard to conflict resolution. But after the U.S. exited the deal and the Europeans didn't comply with the terms of their undertakings under the JCPOA, even 14 months after the JCPOA was left by the United States, Iran started modifying its undertakings to send a signal that it would not stay under the deal for quite a long time. But at around September, Iran halted its modifications in order to give a final chance, a last chance, to the Biden administration if he wins the election, and he won the election. Now, 1 month later, after he came to office, he still denies what he needs to do, what's right, removing the sanctions. So, as they persist in the same containment strategy, Iran has resumed, again, its modification of its undertakings. The remaining part was the surveillance and inspections under the additional protocol to the NPT, which has happened to be the most vital part. Iran was never willing to stop it, but it was forced by the U.S. persistent and continued sanctions policy against Iran.
The World Health Organization has delivered the COVID-19 vaccine shipment to Ghana, making it the first country in the world to receive shots under the organization's COVAX scheme. A flight carrying 600,000 doses of AstraZeneca Oxford vaccine, produced by an Indian firm, landed in Ghana's capital, Accra. Local representatives of the WHO and the United Nations Children's Agency have described the vaccine's arrival as, quote, a momentous occasion. They also called the move a critical step in bringing the pandemic to an end. The UN-backed COVAX initiative, which was launched 8 months ago, aims to ensure a fair distribution of vaccines between rich and poor nations. Under the COVAX program, the UN Health Agency is expected to deliver some 2 billion doses of COVID vaccines to member states by the end of the year. At least 16 people have been killed and over 50 injured in an attack by the Boko Haram terrorist group in Nigeria's northeastern state of Borno. Security forces say the terrorists fired two mortar shells on the densely populated city of Maiduguri. 9 of the dead were young boys who were hit while playing football. Boko Haram has repeatedly made incursions into Maiduguri, aiming to overrun the regional capital. Since gaining widespread exposure in 2009, the terrorist group has killed over 36,000 people and displaced around 2 million from their homes in Nigeria. The Boko Haram insurgency has caused a dire humanitarian crisis in the region, including in neighboring Niger, Chad, and Cameroon. Italy has called on the United Nations to probe the recent killing of its ambassador to the Democratic Republic of Congo. Foreign Minister Luigi Di Maio says Rome wants the World Food Program and the UN to clarify what happened. He said the Italian government expects a prompt, clear, and exhaustive response. Italian envoy Luca Attanasio died in a Monday ambush in a dangerous part of the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo near the border with Rwanda. The ambush targeted a World Food Program convoy. The DRC has blamed a Rwandan insurgent group for the killing. The group has pointed the finger at Rwandan and Congolese armies. Authorities in the U.S. state of Texas say around 3.4 million people still face disrupted water supplies following a deadly winter storm last week. The authorities said over 200 counties were reporting water issues as of Tuesday evening. The number was much lower compared to Monday, when over 7.9 million people faced water disruptions. The freezing weather conditions left dozens dead and knocked out power stations in Texas. It took several days for the authorities to restore power. Fresh water and food have been distributed to residents, with long queues formed in some locations to receive the supplies.
The U.S. state of Texas is still grappling with the fallout from a deadly storm that created apocalyptic scenes across much of the state's southern and central parts last week. The heavy snowfall and the subsequent disruption of electricity and water services prompted Texans to stand in long lines for hours every day outside churches, community centers, and parking lots to get safe food and drinkable water. Texan authorities said millions still have no water at all.
Been here up since 5 o'clock, and I've been on the road since 6. And I know it's 11:30, but I'm going to sit here until, I have no choice. All the stores in my area are out of water.
It's pretty tough to find bottled water. We are having to boil, to wash dishes or do anything.
Yeah, we're out of water, so not good.
Executive Director of the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, Toby Baker, said lack of water is affecting about 14.3 million residents out of a total population of around 29 million. People across Texas were also advised to boil water before using it. This as officials distributed fresh water and food to thousands of Texas residents. The record-breaking freeze also knocked out power stations there.
I'm number 10. I'm very frustrated. I'm a diabetic. I have a 94-year-old senior that's a diabetic. We haven't had no medicine or nothing. I'm on insulin, and I haven't had no insulin. We can't get nothing. So I'm really frustrated mentally, but I'm keeping it together.
This storm has already killed many, prompting President Joe Biden to approve a major disaster declaration for Texas. Biden also called on federal authorities to coordinate disaster relief in neighboring states of Louisiana and Oklahoma that also got hit by the extreme weather.
The disruptions in Texas and elsewhere serve as a grim reminder that the U.S.'s aging infrastructure needs renovation. This was especially highlighted a couple of years ago when the U.S. received a grade of D+ by top engineers in the country. That has come to light, especially after scientists warned that global warming could have severe consequences for people across America. Upgrading or renovating the faltering U.S. infrastructure will require a huge budget, and that's a major challenge, especially in a country that is suffering from the worst case of COVID-19 infections. Congress and the new U.S. administration are widely divided over how to tackle these challenges and renovate the country's infrastructure.
The severe winter storms have caused widespread blackouts in several states, including Texas, Oklahoma, and Mississippi. Drinking water systems in Ohio and several other states were knocked offline. Road networks countrywide were paralyzed, and vaccination efforts in 20 states were disrupted. That said, one-third of the U.S. oil production was halted due to severe weather conditions. But as these states are struggling to restore electricity and water services, signs of the risks posed by extreme weather conditions to America's aging infrastructure crops up across the country.
So it isn't just an infrastructure aging issue in Texas, it's a political decision to do extreme deregulation. And then the infrastructure couldn't work, and once the power went out, so did the pumps for the water. And since most people heat by electricity in Texas, because they don't use it very often, the pipes froze. So they broke, and when that happened, the water pressure dropped. So even when they got water back, or got electricity back, the cities couldn't turn on the water until they fixed the leaks, which is what's going on now.
But the crisis is not just limited to what happened last week in Texas and several other states. It carries a profound warning. The New York Times says, as climate change brings more frequent and intense storms, floods, heat waves, wildfires, and other extreme events, it is putting a growing strain on the foundations of the U.S. economy. That is, its network of roads and railways, drinking water systems, power plants, electrical grids, industrial waste sites, and even homes. The report argues that failure in just one sector can set off a domino effect of breakdowns and hard-to-predict ways.
Anybody who studies the issues of breakdowns of infrastructure knows that you have cascading effects. So if you have, for instance, say, the tunnel underneath the Hudson River, if that's the only rail link with New York and New Jersey, it's 100 years old, if that fails, the economies of both of those entities are going to be in deep, deep trouble, which will cause other problems.
According to New York Times, much of the country's infrastructure was built decades ago under the illusion that the environment would remain stable. Sewer systems are overflowing more often as powerful rainstorms exceed their capacity. Coastal homes and highways are collapsing as intensified runoff erodes cliffs. Homes once beyond the reach of wildfires are burning in blazes they were never designed to withstand. Now, with President Biden calling for a major push to upgrade the nation's infrastructure, getting a closely divided Congress to spend hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars, would be a major challenge. Otherwise, with scientists warning that an overall rise in extreme weather could create sweeping new risks, one could not imagine what will be waiting for the people across America.
Also, New York's Attorney General says the police officers involved in the last year killing of unarmed African-American Daniel Prude will not be indicted. Letitia James said the officers will face no criminal charges following a decision by a grand jury. She criticized the U.S. criminal justice system for allowing police to use force unnecessarily and without facing consequences. The New York Attorney General said the system is broken at its core and needs reforms. A video of Prude's March arrest by Rochester police was made public in September. The footage showed an officer putting a spit hood over his head, holding it tightly. Prude died days later. The video gave a boost to anti-racism rallies in the U.S. U.S. President Joe Biden is expected to call Saudi Arabia's King Salman as an American intelligence report on the murder of prominent journalist Jamal Khashoggi is about to come out. The Wednesday call would be the first talk between Biden as U.S. president and King Salman. A U.S. media outlet says Khashoggi's case would be a hot topic of their conversation. According to Axios, the report by the U.S. Director of National Intelligence could put one of the king's sons in a difficult situation. The unclassified document reportedly implies that Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman was involved in Khashoggi's murder. Khashoggi was a Washington Post columnist and strong critic of Saudi government policies. He was assassinated by Saudi agents as the country's consulate in Istanbul in October 2018. Crowds of Ecuadorian indigenous people have arrived in the capital, Quito, to protest an alleged electoral fraud. Protesters demanded a recount of this month's presidential election. Left-wing indigenous leader Yaku Perez addressed them. He said of the nearly 40,000 voting sheets, almost half have inconsistencies. Perez said that has denied him a place in the runoff. Ecuador's Elections Council this week confirmed that left-wing economist Andres Arauz and conservative banker Guillermo Lasso will advance to the runoff. The vote is slated for April 11th. Protesters have once again taken to the streets in Myanmar to denounce a military coup that ousted the country's de facto leader, Aung San Suu Kyi. Hundreds gathered in Mandalay and the largest city, Yangon, chanting slogans against the military. The protests have continued unabated for more than 2 weeks now in defiance of enhanced security measures by the military. A civil disobedience campaign has continued too. People want civilian leaders to be reinstated and detained officials to be released. Myanmar's army seized power on February the 1st in alleged fraud in the November elections in which Suu Kyi's party won against a pro-military party. So far, three protesters have been killed and hundreds arrested. Nay San Lewin, the coordinator of the Free Rohingya Coalition, says a major goal of the protesters in Myanmar is to change the current constitution that gives power to the military.
The protests are increasing day by day, and across the country, millions of people are taken to the street, and they are protesting against this military coup. They don't want this military dictatorship at all. And also, most of them agree to demand to abolish the 2008 constitution, which was created by this military regime in 2008. Now the trend is they are targeting to abolish this constitution, which will enable the equal rights, justice for all, because this constitution is controlling by the military, and they are sharing the 25% seat at the parliament, and also the some ministry, the minister needs to be appointed by the commander in chief, and they are from the military. So I think the movement they call the Myanmar Early Spring Revolution, this will be, if they go continuously like now, I think the military will not last this time.
And that's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC, Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
In the midst of a national shortage of N95 masks, the US government quietly granted an exception to its export ban on protective gear, allowing as many as 5 million of the masks per month to be shipped overseas. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Christina Jewett, correspondent at Kaiser Health News. This article is published under the heading, U.S. Workers Cried Out for More Masks. The government allowed N95 exports anyway. Here's more. In the midst of a national shortage of N95 masks, the U.S. government quietly granted an exception to its export ban on protective gear, allowing as many as 5 million of the masks per month to be shipped overseas. The Federal Emergency Management Agency issued the waiver in the final moments of Donald Trump's presidency last month, allowing a Texas company to export its products after it failed to secure U.S. customers, according to FEMA letter obtained by KHN. National Nurses United President Zanny Trunfo-Cortez called the export waiver unconscionable and said N95s remain under lock and key in many hospitals. She said she still has to beg for a new N95 if hers gets soiled during a shift caring for COVID-19 patients. Healthcare employers and a federal agency that is supposed to be protecting the people of America are not doing their jobs, she said. They have no regard for American people's safety. The disconnect between frontline workers going without better protection and federal officials suddenly exporting masks boils down to one thing, workplace safety experts say. The government has not pivoted quickly enough to lift supply chain crisis mode guidelines and force employers to take costly and sometimes cumbersome steps to better protect workers with top quality gear. The FEMA letter references the challenge that Fort Worth-based Prestige Emeritech faith in finding customers for its government-approved high-end respirators. Hospitals did not want to fit test employees to its N95s, a 15-minute process per employee to ensure that a new N95 model seals to the face, according to company president Mike Bowen. Bowen said he ramped up N95 production during the pandemic from 75,000 to 9.6 million per month. Lately, he said he can't sell them to major buyers, does not have the infrastructure to sell them to small buyers, and has so many in storage that he may need to lay off workers and wind down production. The FEMA letter references those challenges and says the waiver was granted in the national defense interest to ensure he keeps production running at pace. The letter was transmitted to Border Patrol officials who oversee exports 103 minutes before Joe Biden was sworn into office. Yet even with the waiver, Bowen said he hasn't been able to find an overseas buyer. He said he can't understand the contradictory information he is getting. Frontline workers say they need more N95s, but hospitals say they don't. There is a disconnect someplace, and I don't know where it is, Bowen said. Why aren't my phones ringing off the hook if there is a shortage? A FEMA official said by email that the waiver could be revoked at any time if U.S. demand increases and that the agency could require the company to satisfy domestic demand before exporting N95s. Although prices fall considerably for those buying in bulk, prices for smaller lots of N95s have reached $4 to $7 each, according to GetUs PPE, a nonprofit meant to match frontline workers with needed gear. The requirement for employers to perform fit tests annually was set aside amid the public health emergency, giving employers little incentive to veer from the industry standard models like 3M that were used for years. And the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has left guidelines in place that say a limited cadre of health care workers should get N95s, which can be reused and rationed. That adds up to an unusual situation in which U.S. mask supplies have surged, but employers' motivation to buy the best protective gear has not, said Peg Seminario, a former union health and safety official who recently signed a letter urging the CDC to update its guidelines to reflect the risk of inhaling the virus. This is crazy, she said. We could crush this pandemic where the biggest risks of infection are, and we are not doing it. Started by a group of emergency room doctors in March, GetUs PPE said it gets 89% of requests for year, often N95s, from health workers outside of hospitals like community clinics, COVID testing sites, and psychiatric care facilities. Demand rose throughout January with 28% of frontline workers seeking N95s reporting that their site had none. Yet the volunteer-run group has been able to fulfill only about 15% of the requests it receives. Dr. Ali Raja, a founder of the group and executive vice chair of the emergency department at Massachusetts General Hospital, said, "The need is vast outside of hospitals, but a small facilities scrambling for gear are not connecting to bulk sellers like Bowen's firm." There was nothing out there, no centralized place for all facilities to base data on this. We want that to be the federal government. On the last day of 2020, FEMA extended its rule prohibiting anyone from exporting PPE, including N95s, without first getting express approval from the agency. The rule says the fall and winter surge in COVID cases meant domestic supply of allocated PPE has not kept pace with demand and is not anticipated to do so. The U.S. Strategic National Stockpile has not yet met its goal for N95 respirators, according to a U.S. Government Accountability Office report. The report said that as of December 18th, there were 190 million N95 respirators in storage, well short of its goal of 300 million. GAO remains deeply troubled that agencies have not acted on recommendations to more fully address critical gaps in the medical supply chain, the government watchdog report says. Another twist to the saga is that millions of counterfeit N95s stamped 3M, an industry standard that has long been used in previously required annual fit tests, have flooded hospital shelves even as federal agents rush to seize them at U.S. ports. A prominent group of scientists wrote to the CDC recently to point out guidelines that urgently need to be changed to protect workers from inhaling tiny airborne virus particles. Their letter noted that the CDC does not recommend the use of N95 respirators outside healthcare settings, even though outsized risks are documented for bus drivers, prison guards, and meatpacking staffers. CDC guidelines also allow hospitals to limit which workers get the N95s, leaving out those in community setting and lower-level workers who typically spend the most time next to patients. In the Loss on the Frontline project, KHN and The Guardian have documented the deaths of hundreds of more than 3,440 frontline health workers, of whom 2 in 3 were workers of color and 56% worked outside of hospitals. For more than 120 who died, family members had concerns about PPE, including the extensive reuse of N95s or the use of surgical masks for direct care of COVID patients.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, hastiness. S- Speed has become a fashion and necessity in the digital era. The limited resources and the growing population have necessitated the development of speedy service as fast food, express ticketing, quick visas, fast lane traffic, and so on and so forth. Even the time is moving on the fast track. Years get completed before we count the days. Burgers and pizzas profit from our hastiness and laziness. People seek a slimming center to shed the flab faster. No family likes to waste time on the household works and instead engages a servant or gadget. The ill effects of rushing up in everything are not understood by many. They're just not paying attention. They're just going with the status quo. The irony is that humans want everything faster other than one thing. And that one thing is death. To understand the value of patience and tolerance, certain routine life activities and their effects will be discussed after the break, but know that hastiness has become our life today. Everything that we are doing is in a haste. Everybody is rushing. Everybody is trying to get from one point to another in a very limited amount of time. They're trying to get things done in a very hasty manner. And hence, when it comes to even acquiring knowledge, there are so many who are hasty and they just want one-liner answers. Well, guess what? Haste is not always a good thing. As a matter of fact, generally speaking, haste is something that puts you in trouble and you have to compromise and suffer with the consequences later on. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we're discussing the topic of hastiness. And we said that our lifestyle today has become based on hastiness. Health is the casualty we pay. Fast foods save time but endanger our health. All kinds of disorders like obesity, diabetes, and blood pressure are caused by them. The desire to get things done faster makes a person restless and anxious, which in turn produce emotional setbacks of anger, stress, and depression. Eagerness to earn more in a short amount of time results in the least care for health. Isn't that right? Aren't we not seeing this? Well, another downside of hastiness is wastage increase. Citizens turn hasty on the road. Vehicles move at a breakneck speed during the peak hours of traffic to make up the time lost on unwanted things. Consumption of fuel and lubricants goes up, apart from the tear and wear of the vehicles. Rash driving causes disability and death. These are again some of the negative aspects of being hasty. Then some people expedite the delivery of their child to have a fancy birthday, like the first day of the new year or any other memorable event. In the eagerness to make the kids smarter, parents put them in school at an early age, while some train their wards in driving to show off to the world. All these over-enthusiastic acts actually burden the children, depriving of the fun and frolic due to their age. Meat manufacturers force the animals like chicken to swallow the food to make them grow faster in the shortest period. All of these are because we have become hasty, which is a negative trait, and hence Islam wants us to think through our decisions and our moves and our actions and observe patience instead. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The loss of lean tissue when you diet, which burns around 15 to 25 calories per kilogram each day, lowers resting metabolic rate, meaning you need fewer calories than you previously did. But the body also deliberately slows down metabolism to preserve energy stores and minimize weight loss. When the body senses depleted fat stores, it triggers adaptive thermogenesis, a process which further reduces resting metabolic rate and may stunt weight loss despite strict dieting. Here we present you an article in this regard written jointly by Adam Collins, a principal teaching fellow in nutrition, and Ayuf Egan, a researcher in mathematical modeling of weight loss, who are both from University of Surrey, the UK, titled "Dieting May Slow Metabolism, But It Doesn't Ruin It." This article was published on theconversation.com. Please stay tuned. When it comes to dieting, research shows the majority of people will regain some, if not most, of the weight they've lost. While there are many reasons why this weight regain may happen, some popular claims online are that it's because dieting permanently wrecks your metabolism. But while it's true that dieting slows your metabolism, it also improves your metabolism in many positive ways. When we talk about metabolism, we are typically referring to your metabolic rate. This is the number of calories your body burns at rest. Of course, the more activity we do, the more calories we burn. In order to lose weight through dieting, you need to consume fewer calories than you're using. This forces the body to use its energy stores, like fat, to meet the shortfall. Your metabolic rate will also change as a result. The loss of lean tissue, that is muscle, when you diet, which burns around 15 to 25 calories per kilogram each day, lowers resting metabolic rate, meaning you need fewer calories than you previously did. But the body also deliberately slows down metabolism to preserve energy stores and minimize weight loss. When the body senses depleted fat stores, it triggers adaptive thermogenesis, a process which further reduces resting metabolic rate, and many stunt weight loss despite strict dieting. Adaptive thermogenesis can kick in within 3 days of starting a diet and is suggested to persist way beyond dieting, even hampering weight maintenance and favoring weight regain. One example of adaptive thermogenesis effect was seen in a widely publicized 2016 study which looked at former contestants of US reality TV show The Biggest Loser. It showed that participants had a significant decrease in their metabolic rate even several years after initial weight loss. Participants needed to eat up to 500 calories less than expected daily. Other studies have also shown metabolic slowing with weight loss, but with much smaller decreases, around 100 calories fewer a day to maintain weight. However, there is less certainty whether this slowing persists once people are weight stable. Research seems to show that most adaptive thermogenesis happens in the actual dieting phase as a temporary response to the amount of weight being lost. Overall, we don't have conclusive evidence to support the notion that metabolic rate remains slowed over the long term, over a year post-diet. It's worth noting that many factors can affect metabolic rate, so changes to it after dieting may vary between people. For example, one study on fasting diets showed metabolic rate indeed decreases as a result, but those who had the greatest decrease in metabolic rate already had a higher metabolic rate to begin with. Overestimating metabolic rates at the start of a study or errors in predicting metabolic rate after weight loss could both also affect study results. It's agreed that metabolic rate slows because of weight loss due to both decreasing body size and as a way of preserving key tissues and fuel reserves. But there is currently no consensus on how much it slows by. Adam Collins and Afe Egan wrote, "Quantifying and predicting this slowing is something we are currently researching at the University of Surrey." However, a decrease in metabolic rate is just one change that occurs with weight loss. When we lose weight, the main change we see is a decrease in body fat. This decrease is actually our fat cells shrinking in size. They don't actually disappear. This shrinking of fat cells signals the body's fuel stores are emptying, causing a drop in the hormone leptin. Ordinarily, leptin inhibits appetite and increases metabolic rate. But when leptin levels plummet, metabolic rate is slow and hunger increases. The gut also releases fewer insulins, hormones which regulate appetite, when we lose weight, which could persist beyond dieting. Less leptin and fewer insulin may make us feel hungrier and can lead to overeating. When fat cells shrink, they are able to take up glucose and store fat more efficiently to help restore lost fuel. Your body also creates more fat cells so that you can store more fat in the future to better cope with this calorie crisis the next time it happens. But as contradictory as it sounds, all these changes actually result in a more efficient and ultimately healthier metabolism. For example, smaller fat cells are better for our health, as overinflated sick fat cells don't work as well in getting rid of surplus sugar and fat. This can lead to high levels of sugar and fat in the blood, increasing risk of insulin resistance, diabetes, and cardiovascular disease. So, dieting doesn't technically ruin your metabolism, but rather improves it by helping it work better. But without care, this metabolic improvement can conspire against you to regain the weight and even overshoot your original weight. Studies show exercise or simply physical activity may be one way to prevent weight regain by improving our ability to maintain our weight and can potentially minimize metabolic slowing. Exercise can also help regulate appetite and fuel burning in the short term and may make weight loss more sustainable in the long term.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 41 meters 7300 kHz for the Indian subcontinent and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio. with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته dear listeners. Welcome to another episode of Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio. In continuing our discussion on the tradition of Imam Kadhim alayhi salam, which he narrated to his dear and close companion Hisham, or Hisham ibn Hakam, we've reached the 17th section of this beautiful tradition. The section is quite lengthy, so we'll get straight into it. It is a very beautiful section in which the Imam is saying that certain characteristics, or certain traits, or certain thoughts and ideas that a person may have will aid a person in destroying his intellect. Will kind of, you know, take the intellect and the faculty of one's intellect and remove that process and the manner in which a person should actually think it. So the Imam says, "Oh Hisham, if a man or if a person releases three traits upon three others, it is as though he has aided in the destruction of his own intellect. If he obscures the light of contemplation with far-fetched hopes," so he, you know, has those desires that are extremely far-fetched. He thinks about things that, as we say, he's a daydreamer. "And expunges wondrous wisdom from his heart with excessive talk." So one of the things, as we mentioned previously, contemplation is with silence. So excessive talk obviously is the opposite of it. And it removes that ability to contemplate from a person. "And extinguishes his willingness to learn from life's lessons with his carnal desires." That those illicit sweetness, as we mentioned previously, he's something that he wants more than anything else, that he sees that no other people have fallen into certain traps because of these very carnal desires that they themselves have followed. He does not take lessons from the lives of others. He himself said, "No, I also want to experience it. I want to go and see what happens." Then it is as though he has aided his carnal soul in destroying his own intellect. And then the Imam alayhi salam, after mentioning these three traits, continues and says, "And he who destroys his own intellect has ruined his lot in this world and in the hereafter." So that is the result of a person who has destroyed his intellect, who kind of removes that intellect which is that divine intellect, that intellect which guides a person towards the truth, which enables a person to see the light of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, which enables a person to see the divine teaching that have been brought by the messengers and by the prophets alayhim as-salam. If a person destroys intellect and is unable to use intellect to understand and conceive and perceive these teachings that have come to him, surely in this life that he has, that is temporal, and in the next life, which is infinite, which is, you know, boundless, he has lost and he has destroyed his own soul. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to keep us away from being such people. Until next time, my dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure. Oh Lord, here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more.
Greetings and a warm welcome to another edition of The Debate. I'm Behrouz Najafi. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has stressed in his recent speech that the Islamic Republic is not seeking nukes, while at the same time it won't dispense